What do you remember from yesterday's class? Now, I would like to, before going on to the 30th and 31st chapter today, I would like to explain the 29th chapter a little differently from the point of view of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because when I was preparing for this, I read the comments of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and they turned my way of seeing this chapter upside down. So perhaps we will turn your way of seeing things upside down too. But in any case, I'll try not to spend too long on it. Did you read that? Did Mataji read the Vishnu's purport to the 22nd verse about the greatest intelligence? That's such an amazing purport, isn't it? One of my favorite. Where did she read it from? From the Uddhava Gita book or from the... Yeah. It's really my favorite in Vanaswami translation. But in any case, in the previous chapter, in 28, after describing so much about Jnana Yoga, after describing so much knowledge, concluding the practice of yoga and jnana yoga and removing the obstacles, Krishna concludes in the 44th chapter, 44th verse, "The yogi who has taken shelter of me remains free from hankering because he experiences the happiness of the soul within. Thus, while executing the process of yoga, is never defeated by obstacles." So again, jnana, yoga, is brought to the point of bhakti. Every chapter, practically speaking, when other processes are described other than bhakti, the point is made that really it's bhakti that gives them life. Bhakti meaning the soul's devotional relationship with Krishna. It gives them life. It is the goal, it is the means to attain the goal, or whatever goal one wants. But it is bhakti, it is the taking shelter of Krishna. And that is what will clear the heart from all the hankerings, which will tend to overthrow the a practicing yogi. Because the yoga, jnana yoga, the senses aren't engaged in Krishna's service, so it's so much based on restraint. So there's such a tendency to get knocked over by the mind. So the process of taking shelter of Krishna is really the essence of the processes of success in every path. So that's an essential point, and that is really what's happened in every chapter, while in so many different ways processes have been described, jnana, karma, etc. But again and again, bhakti is seen to be their goal and their essence. But in any case, after describing this process of jnana yoga in the 29th chapter, Uddhava says something that is quite similar to what Arjuna states in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's so difficult for one who has difficulty. This practice of yoga is so difficult for one who cannot control his mind. One must be able to bring the mind fully under the control of the intelligence in one's practices. It's so difficult. And then he even says the yogis weary, they become tired, and give up, practically speaking, their attempt to bring their mind under control. But those who try the paths of yoga and karma, but don't take shelter of you, they're defeated by your maya. So therefore, what is the essence? And therefore, he says, it's not astonishing that you intimately approach your servants who have taken exclusive shelter of you. You even display your affection because you're a person. You reciprocate with those. Bhakti is more than a path, a set of practices that are mechanically done. It's a relationship with Krishna. It's a giving and taking with Krishna. It's something completely different from the mechanical processes of jnana and yoga and karma. So Krishna even displays special affection for the monkeys who take shelter of him. That should be encouraging. So therefore, who would reject you? Who would reject you, who are the essence of all paths, and exchange you for some other goal, for some other object of attainment? And if one attains you, then he loses nothing anyway. We're sort of paraphrasing the fifth verse now. He gains. What is there any lack? What doesn't the person who has attained the dust of your lotus feet, what doesn't he have? What is missing from his existence? So therefore, then he says, and you so kindly appear in two features to deliver us, to deliver conditioned souls to you who direct us, and that is as the super soul and as the acharya. So the first point that Uddhava made was, it's so difficult to control the mind. Why don't you please just tell me, make it really simple for me about what I should do. So Krishna says in the eighth verse, and he's going to reply in the 8th through 36th verse, in 29 verses, he's going to reply. And in the 8th verse, he introduces the principles. I'll describe to you the principles of what? Of devotion to me. Mama Dharma. By executing. So the question is, what should I do when I can't control my mind? And I'm not going to be able to do this practice of yoga and jnana. So Krishna replies, but I'm going to describe to you the principles of bhakti again. Because this is his final words. If we remember correctly, Uddhava, Uddhava has approached Krishna. Why? Because in the first chapter of the 11th canto, there was a curse pronounced by Krishna's arrangement by the sages upon the youth of the Yadu dynasty, saying this club, because Samba teased them, the boys were teasing the sages, and the sages became angry and they cursed him. This club, you're going to give birth to a club. That was so long ago. Do you remember that one? Yeah. He said, what will this thing, because Samba was very beautiful. So they dressed him up in a sari, and they were teasing the sages, and they placed a pillow underneath his belly, under the cloth, and said, oh, what will this beautiful young girl give birth to? Will it be a boy or a girl, my dear sages? And they were teasing them, the sages. And the sages didn't appreciate it, again by Krishna's arrangement, and they said, you will give birth to that which will be the destruction of your dynasty. And they looked, and they saw it was an iron club, and they brought it to the attention of Ugrasena, who didn't tell Krishna, but who ground up that club into fine powder and threw it into the ocean. And the last piece was also thrown in the ocean. And the last piece, because when you're grinding, there's a piece that you hold up onto, and that you can't get it to nothing if you have some experience with sandalwood. Grinding sandalwood pulp, you know what I mean? So there's an extra piece that was also thrown into the ocean. Of the reeds became the iron filings became seeds, and they in Prabhas they grew into iron cane or clubs, basically. And we'll hear in chapter 30, these were the Nimittika Karan, the intermediate cause of the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. And the last piece of iron became the arrowhead that the hunter Yara shot at the Lord's lotus feet. So then, immediately after this cursing by the sages, there were ill omens manifest in Dwaraka. And Krishna said, this is very inauspicious. We must go to Prabhas to perform sacrifices that will remove the inauspicity, the malefic elements that are causing this. And Uddhav understood that no inauspiciousness could come, could visit, even for a short visit. He could not visit Dwarka unless they were sanctioned by Krishna. So Uddhava, being very intelligent, understood that it was time for Krishna to end his pastimes. And indeed, in the chapter, the demigods came to Dwarka and they said, Krishna, wouldn't you like to move on now? It's time. And Krishna heard that, and they offered wonderful prayers. Krishna's Leela was winding up, it was ending. So Uddhava understood it because his intelligence was very sharp. And also because Krishna wanted him to understand it. So he approached Krishna in a wonderful way in the sixth chapter. And he said, I understand you're leaving. Please take me with you. Please don't leave me here alone. I cannot tolerate your separation. But Krishna, and there were beautiful prayers offered by Uddhava, glorifications of Krishna, and explained the essence of the process that of devotion that was his methodology. He wasn't interested in liberation, or he just couldn't tolerate being separate from Krishna. Tapamaya jayema hi. He would cross over the ocean of material existence just by honoring the garlands and the flowers and the scents and the food and the cloth and the alankara, the decorations that had adorned Krishna's body, because he was a servant of Krishna. He was full of devotion for Krishna, and he couldn't tolerate being separate from Krishna. But Krishna would not honor Uddhava's desire to leave, depart this universe along with Krishna, because Krishna had some other service for him. So the question is raised, how could one be with Krishna, Uddhava specifically, or us as well, how could we be with Krishna while Krishna is not present? Which was Uddhava's dilemma. And it's also our dilemma, should we want to be with Krishna. So the whole Uddhava Gita, with all the jnana, with all the karma, with all the yoga that's described, is really describing the process of being with Krishna, either this slowly or quickly. Being with Krishna is the goal of the Uddhava Gita, clearly established in practically speaking every chapter, including the 28th chapter on yoga. So now, after explaining the chapter on jnana and yoga, and explaining how one must control one's mind and focus it on Krishna, and then Uddhava saying that I can't do it through this process of yoga. If that's what it's going to take for me to be in this world without you, I'm not going to succeed. By the power of my intelligence and intent, focusing my mind and then placing it in your shelter, I'm not going to succeed. So Krishna said, okay, don't worry. I'll summarize everything. Because I've spoken so many words up to now, I will summarize everything. So he says, So the introductory principle is described in 8. I shall describe to you the principles of devotion to me by executing which a mortal human being will conquer unconquerable death. So there's going to be some verses, quite a few verses, where Krishna's going to summarize things. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes Krishna's words and places them by placing them in two different categories. Because there have been so many instructions on jnana given, and so many instructions on bhakti, Krishna is going to separate them and describe the goal or the processes for those who are interested in taking the jnana path, which ultimately ends in Krishna consciousness, and also, and primarily, those who are interested in proceeding on the bhakti path, unmixed with jnana and karma, anavrita, anukulena, Krishna, anushilanam, unmixed. So he's going to make a division. He's going to describe or analyze Krishna's instructions for those who want to proceed through the path of jnana, and also for those who want to proceed directly through the path of bhakti. So here in the 9th verse, he describes the path of bhakti, which is unmixed with jnana and unmixed with karma. And here is the 9th verse. Always remembering me, one should perform all his duties for me without becoming impetuous. What's a synonym for the word impetuous? Whimsical. Basically whimsical. Acting on the whim of the mind. Oh, I feel like doing this. Oh, now I feel like doing that. Oh, I feel like doing this. Oh, now let me do that. No. One should perform one's duties for Krishna and not act whimsically. One should always remember Krishna. Anusmara yudhyacha. With mind and intelligence offered to me, one should fix his mind in attraction to my devotional service. Madharma atmamana rati. One develops this attraction for Krishna and performs one's duties for his pleasure. Now, one should take places more on the path of straight bhakti. One should take shelter of holy places where my saintly devotees reside. Mad bhakta sadubir sritan, where my devotees are there. And one should be guided by the exemplary activities of my devotees who appear amongst the demigods, demons, and human beings. Either alone, this is for all the devotional path, again, in 11, either alone or in public gatherings with singing, dancing, and other exhibitions of royal opulence, one should arrange to celebrate those holy days, ceremonies, and festivals set aside especially for my worship. This is all the process of bhakti. Now, how should one view others? So in text 12 through 19, Krishna is going to explain that, because that was just on what one should only do. But this 12 through 19 is for those who, or rather, this is the essence of jnana marg. It is not the essence of bhakti marg. We just heard mostly the essence of bhakti. Just always fix your consciousness in me, and it's so simple. Perform all your work and just do it for me. Give yourself to me. Associate with my devotees. Chant here in public. Observe festivals for me. All based on attraction to me. Bhakti, devotion. And then, In these other verses, 12 through 19, Vishwanath said the purpose of these verses, which are the essence of the jnana marg, they are presented to attract the jnanis, because again, jnana always ends in bhakti, and Krishna wants bhakti. I mean, if it's practiced to its conclusion. So, then in 13 to 14, excuse me, yes, first in 12, with a pure heart, one should see me, the Supreme Soul, within all beings and also within oneself. One should just see. To be both unblemished by anything material and also present everywhere, both externally and internally, just like the omnipresent sky, to attract the jnanis. O brilliant Uddhav, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each one, and who by taking shelter of the divine knowledge offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. This is completely parallel, or the same practically, that Kapila Muni spoke many, many cantos ago. Such a man sees equally the Brahmin and the outcast, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. Continuing this jnana, for him who constantly meditates on my presence within all persons, so in other words, to move the jnanis towards to seeing that Krishna is in everything, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, abusiveness, along with false ego, are very quickly destroyed. Disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, one should give up the bodily conception and its accompanying embarrassment. One should offer obeisances before all, even the dogs, outcasts, cows, and asses falling flat upon the ground like a rod. Now that will be a destroyer of false ego. And to one who has developed the ability to see me within all living beings, one must continue to worship me by this process with the activities of speech, mind, and body. See how there's such a difference in the methodologies, actually, of, as Vishwanath is describing, of bhakti. One is just become absorbed in Krishna. One is a process of dismantling the false ego, and with the attempt to see Krishna in all circumstances, in all beings. By such transcendental knowledge of the all-pervading personality of God, it seems his presence is everywhere, there is nowhere where he is not. One is able to see the absolute truth everywhere. Freed from all doubts, one gives up fruit of activities. Indeed, I consider this process, using one's mind, words, and bodily functions for realizing me, so the path of jnana is perfected there, within all living beings, to be the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. Now, bhakti again, Vishwanath says, 20. My dear Uddhav, this is the essence of bhakti. So just he's just explained the essence of jnana, is using one's mind, words, and bodily functions for realizing me within all living entities. Now, as the best of methodologies, now he's going to say the essence of bhakti. My dear Uddhav, because I have personally established it, this process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Certainly a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process, that one places himself under Krishna's care and nothing is lost. So it sounds so obvious, it sounds so simple, it doesn't depend on our abilities to even see Krishna's presence everywhere. It is called Sharanagati. It sounds so simple. It is so difficult to do. Why? Because the false ego, the false sense of being separate from Krishna, prohibits our surrender to Krishna. Certainly. So establishing this, Because this is Krishna's personally established it, this process of devotional service. Mad dharma, my dharma, my dear Uddhava. There's not even the slightest loss. It's transcendental. It's free from any material motivation. In other words, the simple process of unmotivated, pure devotional service, placing oneself under Krishna's protection, being established as Krishna's in our natural rightful position as Krishna's servant. This is the essence. And then acting as a servant without any other motivation. And this verse is then the next two verses, which will really end this section. O Uddhav, and this verse is I found very interesting. O Uddhav, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful, and laments. So he's in a dangerous situation. This is what an ordinary person do. He cries out, he becomes afraid, he laments. Although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless. So he's talking about one type of a useless emotions, becoming fearful, crying, and lamenting. But activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. So, there is no... So this verse actually will go in two different ways. It's a tricky verse to understand. Yes or no? What was the essence of it mentioned yesterday?
This material buying is useless. You can't change anything. You're just subject to the laws of nature. But if you take shelter of Krishna, then.
But if what? Okay. Yes. Wonderful point. But listen to this verse. O Uddhava, greatest of saints. In a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful, and laments. Although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activities, so here's a change in topic. But, different from that, activities offered to me without personal motivation, they are different from useless emotions, even if they appear to be externally useless, they amount to the actual process of religion. So what's the actual process of religion? It is activities offered to me without personal motivation. Regardless of what others think of them, and regardless of whether they appear to be useful or not useful in a practical sense, we could take ghee and put it into a fire. And materialists will think, well, I can't think of anything more useless than that. Or taking a lamp and waving it around. Not in a practical sense. So even if they externally appear useless, they amount to the actual process of religion. So this is what Krishna wants to say. Offer just anyabhilasita sunyam. This is the essence of bhakti, the basis, the foundation, the definitive beginning of pure devotional service, which awards one, if one follows the process of unmotivated, pure devotional service, one will develop love for Krishna and come to him. This is the process. And Jiva Goswami describes this as the Abhideya Tattva, This is what it means to be a devotee. And if we don't practice pure devotional service, unmotivated devotional service, acting just for Krishna's pleasure, we won't get the result. And then we get frustrated. So Krishna is here directly describing what he wants. He wants the living entity to come back into his into relationship with him. And what is that relationship? It's one of seva. It's one of service. This is who we are. We are Krishna's servants. So back into that relationship. That is what Krishna wants. Now I'd like to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Perhaps you read it yesterday, but in the frame of reference of what I'm just mentioning, I'll read it again. It's quite interesting. If bhakti is practiced without duplicity, then without effort, it gives effects at every moment. Now that's amazing. That we don't have to do anything. Now Krishna is giving and taking with the same hand though. Oh, with one hand he's going to give and the other hand he's going to take also. The way Vishwanath describes it. If we just serve Krishna without duplicity, meaning without wanting anything other than his pleasure, then the results will come. Nothing else is required. One doesn't have to be a great scholar. One doesn't have to be a perfectionist in this or that or in the karma activities. And one doesn't have to be anything other than simply a sincere, non-duplicitous bhakta, devotee. Whatever process of bhakti, such as hearing or chanting, is directed to me with no desire for material happiness now or later in swaga or for liberation. Whatever process of bhakti is done without effort. The results appear on their own without effort. What is the use of effort to get anything other than to act for Krishna's pleasure? This is the essence of what bhakti is. Don't try for anything else, he's saying. Just try to please me. So simple. Take yourself out of the center. Place Krishna in the center. Always think of him. Do what you do for his pleasure. Keep your consciousness focused on him. And then quoting from a verse, which there's not a reference here, that I can see. The devotees find it useless to worry about eating and shelter. How can the Lord, who sustains the whole universe, ignore his devotees? So we don't have to do any other effort. That's what the point is. It is as useless as efforts executed out of fear and lamentation. So we can, when we lose our bicycle, we can cry and lament, and this is what it's saying in the verse itself. We can be fearful, how would I get home? We can lament, or I'll be so dangerous and everything like that. But those lamentations and fearfulness are useless. So he says, to make our efforts for other things are as useless as for a devotee, for endeavoring for his shelter, etc., 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 is as useless as the activities of fear and lamentation in a dangerous situation. You know, a tiger is running right at you, and you say, "Oh, this is such a bad situation. I'm very much afraid. Oh, why did I ever walk inside the cage? I shouldn't have done it. My mother was correct. I shouldn't have walked in the cage." But rather, you should get out. Don't just sit there and lament or be fearful. So he's comparing, Vishwanath is comparing, you know, explaining Krishna's words as the efforts of a devotee are as useless as that. Just as by attaining one's object, the object naturally becomes visible. Just as when you get your object, you naturally have it, you can see it. So similarly, bhakti appears on its own. If we just endeavor in this way, unmotivatedly, simply trying to please Krishna, bhakti comes on its own. And everything coming from bhakti will come on its own. So don't try to get the object of bhakti. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also made this point about chanting. Don't think too much about the object of chanting. Just follow the process. So the process is this unmotivated, pure devotional service and yabhilasita sanyam. So just as when you have something, you can see it, just as when you perform bhakti in an unmotivated way for Krishna's pleasure, bhakti will appear on its own. So don't try for the results of bhakti. Just practice bhakti. But then he says, still, the sincere devotee always endeavors for bhakti. That endeavor shows its great attraction to bhakti. Effort is thus a great quality. So with one hand he's giving, you don't have to do anything. Just be happy in the process. Know it's going to come. And on the other hand, he grabs it away. One is, don't be in any anxiety. Just follow the process. And the other is, he pulls that away. Be in complete anxiety. If it's for me, tell them that I can't speak to them right now. Anyway, it's a nice ringtone. We have to give you credit for that. Effort is a great quality. Effort to what? Oh, how can I love Krishna? That type of anxiety. How can I serve properly? Eagerness. And then the final verse that in Krishna's instructions on what the essence is of the process that Uddhava should follow is the process. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. One really has to be clever to capture the essence. For by following it, and if one captures it, regardless of anything else, that soul is really intelligent. Because one can in this life make use of the temporary and the unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. And then just soon, he says, this science is very difficult to comprehend. I've repeatedly spoken this knowledge to you with clear reasoning. Anyone who properly understands it will become free from all doubts and will attain liberation. Anyone who fixes his attention on these clear answers to your questions will attain the eternal confidential goal of the Vedas, the supreme absolute truth, who happens to be Krishna. So then, after hearing these wonderful instructions, Uddhava, in separation, circumambulates the Lord, touches his slippers to his head, and leaves for Badrika Ashram. If it was a movie ending, we would say, and never to see the Lord again. Except that he does see the Lord again, because he goes to Badrika Ashram and then goes back to Prabhachetra when he can't control himself. He's too much of a devotee. Nityananda Prabhu was told by Mahaprabhu, stay in Bengal. And then when he came a few later to Jagannath Puri, He said, what can I do? I give Nityananda the order, and he just comes to see me anyway. What can I do? What to do? Go to Bhadarikashram. But then when he hears that Krishna has gone to Prabhachetra, he knows what that means, and he gets there as quickly as he can, and that's described in the earlier cantos, in the beginning of the third canto. So then, after Uddhava leaves, Krishna sends the Yadavas, and that's what we'll begin to read now. Because it's time for the curtain to close on Krishna's pastimes. King Pariksit said, after the great devotee Uddhava left for the forest, what did the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the protector of all living beings, do in the city of Dwarka? So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, short comment. In the 30th chapter, the Lord has the devata portions of the Yadus, because the devatas, the demigods, entered into these eternal associates and also participated in the pastimes, in Krishna's pastimes. So the Lord has the devata portions of the Yadus go to Prabhas. So there's a great division in these chapters of tattva and rasa. So the tattva is very much emphasized, not in the verses, but in the commentaries, because the devotees really don't like to hear this pastime from the rasa point of view. From the tattva point of view, it's so glorious. But from the rasa point of view, it is not glorious. It is heartbreaking for those who have their relationship with Krishna truly and deeply established. Like, for it is said that the queens of Dwarka, they were used, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in the 11th chapter, it describes how the queens, they were used to Krishna coming and going all the time. So their separation when he would go was something that was so difficult, but it was something that they had to deal with. But the earth had the fortune of Krishna stepping on her for 125 years without a break. So her separation was even more extreme when Krishna departed from this world. And there would have been no use to preach anyway. He's the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. Uddhava and Krishna tried this with the residents of Vrindavan, with the gopis. And it wasn't extremely successful. So the devata portions of the Yadus go to Prabhas, and Krishna withdraws them from the world and sends them to Swarga, while he, in his expansion, went to Vaikuntha. That's going to be what happens. I'll read from the purport. Lord Krishna cannot actually be cursed by anyone. Narada Muni and the other sages who cursed the Yadu dynasty are eternal devotees of Lord Krishna, and they could hardly curse him. Therefore, in giving up his pastimes and leaving the earth with the Yadu dynasty, Lord Krishna demonstrated his internal potency and personal will, since no one can challenge the supreme potency of the Personality of Godhead. Again and again we're going to hear, this is just a pastime, this is just a pastime. Krishna doesn't actually die. Krishna doesn't actually, the Yadu dynasty members don't die. This is just superficial. It is external. What's really going on is something else. Keep your mind on the tattva point, because don't be bewildered and think, how could this disaster happen to the Yadu dynasty under Krishna's protection? There's so much preaching in that way. Second verse. After his own dynasty met with destruction,
from the curse of the Brahmanas. How could the best of the Yadus give up his body, the dearmost object of all eyes? And of course, it is not possible, because Krishna is his body. How could he give up his body? Jiva Goswami in the purport describes this. He never gives up his spiritual body. But this body, his eternal form, Prayasim Sarvanetrayam, it is the most attractive of pleasure, the most attractive object of pleasure for the eyes. Krishna was so beautiful. Krishna is so beautiful. Param padam bhushana bhushanangam. His body is the ornament of all ornaments. His body beautifies that which is meant to beautify him. So how could he have given this up? How could he have done this? So in the next verse, in text 3, further on that previous verse, saying that how could Krishna give up that body which is the most attractive, the perfection of vision, akshanvantam phalamidam na param vidama, is to see this form of Krishna. So further of that, once their eyes were fixed upon his transcendental form, women were unable to withdraw them. And once that form had entered the ears of the sages and become fixed in their hearts, it would never depart. What to speak of acquiring fame? The great poets who describe the beauty of the Lord's form would have their words invested with transcendental pleasing attraction. That if one describes with one's words, if one is a poet, and one describes with one's words the beauty of the Lord's form, their words become transcendental, pleasing, attractive, because the nature of Krishna's form is so attractive that just a describer, the words of a describer of Krishna's form become potent. And by seeing that form on Arjuna's chariot, all the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attain the liberation of gaining a spiritual body similar to the Lord's. So just seeing the Lord awarded liberation. Seeing the Lord, the women could not remove that form from their eyes. And the sages, hearing about that form, could not remove the fixedness of the Lord's form from their hearts. And that form, that person who is none different from his form, he's going to leave the earth after gracing it for so many years. The right paper. There's a comment by Jiva Goswami. This verse. Here it is. Bhakti Sundarbha, Anuchet 266. Because in the Bhakti Sundarbha, Jiva Goswami speaks about the form, the qualities, the name, and the activities of Krishna as being completely transcendental and potent and having an eternal and having nothing to do with this world. Eternal. So he comments, he quotes this verse. And then he says, this verse explains that the poets who describe the beauty of the Lord's form would have their words invested with transcendentally pleasing attraction. This means they want to glorify the Lord's form more and more and never wish to stop from that glorification. This is also confirmed by the four Kumaras in the verse from the Bhagavatam when the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha 3:15-49. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. As long as our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet, and as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities, we don't care where we are if our consciousness is absorbed in you. So that was the comment of of Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sundara. Sukadeva Goswami said, having observed, because Prithvi Maharaj had asked those questions about Krishna's departure, what happened next? Having observed many disturbing signs in the sky, on the earth, and in outer space, Lord Krishna addressed the Yadus assembled in the Sudama Council Hall as follows. So there were these, Srila Sridhar Swami describes the inauspicious signs that were seen. There was a halo around the sun. This is from the purport. On the earth, there were small earthquakes. In outer space, there was an unnatural redness on the horizon. They were impossible to counteract because they were personally arranged by Krishna. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, pointing out these inauspicious signs, he said, O leaders of the Yadu dynasty, please note all these terrible omens that have appeared in Dwarka, just like the flags of death. We should not remain here a moment longer. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a long comment here. And there's so many Vedic in the appendix in this volume. There's many quotations to explain that everything connected with Krishna is spiritual. So there is really no fear in Dwarka, but Krishna had another idea. Now I would like to, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment describes this in a wonderful way, so I would like to read it. So this is what Krishna said. He said, O leaders of the Yadu dynasty, please make note of these terrible omens that have appeared in Dwarka like flags of death. We should not remain here a moment longer. But this is what he was thinking inside, said Vishwanath. Among all the persons who came to meet me from various places during the trip to Kurukshetra, what chapter was that? In the 10th canto? 84. Excuse me?
84.
Yes, 82, 83, 84, and 85. So many people came to meet Krishna. Who were some of those people?
The
Brijvasis. Who else? Huh? Sages. Many sages came to see Krishna. But amongst all the people came to see me, Kali came unnoticed by others and spoke to me. O Master, when will I take charge of the earth? Krishna said, I said, you can take charge only when my pastimes are over. After I disappear, with the right given by me, Kali will pervade the earth. However, during my present appearance, Dharma has increased to four legs, even though it's the prior age in Dwarapa Yuga. There's not four legs of religion standing, but when Krishna is present, the legs increase. And Dharma has increased to four legs, even greater than in Satyayuga. If Dharma is so strong, how can Kali rule? The rule is that Kali will rule when there is only one leg of Dharma remaining. And which leg remains in Kali Yuga? Huh? One should not say that when I disappear, then the four legs of Dharma will also disappear. On the logic of Nimit Paye, Nimit Chapyap Apayaha, when the cause disappears, the effect disappears. Since the devotees are of great fame, purifies of the whole. Excuse me. He's saying that if when I leave, It's not going to happen that the four legs of religion will leave, and one can't try to prove this by saying, I am the cause of religion, therefore when I leave, then all religiosity will leave. Because, Krishna says, the demigods will still be there, and they will remain alert to keep Kali away. Moreover, I have destroyed the unfavorable amongst the population, amongst the favorable, unfavorable, and neutral parties. I have destroyed the unfavorable. Now, if I ascend to Vaikuntha with all the inhabitants of my abode in the sight of all persons, as Rama did, the favorable devotees will double in number. Those who are already intensely favorable will increase their prema hundredfold out of great longing and prema. And those who are neutral will become devotees on seeing this extraordinary event. So he's saying all the unfavorable people have been killed. The ones who are favorable to me, if I leave and just go ascend like Lord Ram did, then the favorable will double their prema and the neutral people will become devotees. Dharma will thus increase. How will even a little of Kali's influence be possible? By what method will I increase adharma in order to restrict dharma? Here is the method. I will remain as I do now in Dwarka with the Yadus, who are my associates and pastimes, but I will become invisible to the eyes of all material people. The Devatas, who are Vibhutis, such as Cupid and Kartikeya, have entered into my eternal associates, like Padumi and others. By my power of yoga, I will withdraw them from those bodies without others noticing. Making some fake forms for the eyes of ordinary people, which appear to be Padumi and others, I will have them go to Prabhas with the other inhabitants of Dwarka. And I will have them drink wine after meditating and giving charity. And then I will send them to Swaga according to their individual qualifications as devotees. And then I, in another form, will depart for Vaikuntha with the other inhabitants of Dwarka, as Ram did. And the root form, as in parentheses here, the root form of Krishna and his associates remain invisible in Uppercut Leela in Dwarka. So there are three things going to go on at the same time according to Krishna's plan. That he'll stay behind for his Dwarka Leela with his associates in Uppercut form. The demigods who have entered into the associates will go to Prabhas and assume a demigod a form and do that, and they will be destroyed there. And then Krishna and the other inhabitants of will go to Vaikuntha. And people will think, oh yeah, but what I will not let the common people see this. They will think that the Yadus left Dwarka, they went to Prabhas with all the Yadu dynasty, and under the control of the Brahmin's curse, they drank wine and gave up their bodies after killing each other. They will think that the Lord, myself along with Balaram, giving up the human body, ascended to the spiritual abode. Thus they will say that my body was temporary, made of matter, and thinking that I have a material body is a great offense. I have said, avajananti mam mudha manushyam tanam ashrita. The fools deride me, thinking that I have a material form. And I have thus described the result. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vichetasa rakshashim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Amongst those who cannot distinguish this truth, those who are devotees do not gain salokya. Those who are kamis do not. In other words, if one thinks that Krishna's body is material and then he leaves it behind and goes to the spiritual world, attains Vaikuntha, those people are suras and rakshashas, and if they are kamis and jnanis, no one attains anything if you have this viewpoint. So Krishna, in other words, is going to provide a circumstance that the asuras and the rakshashas and the demoniac viewpoint will increase.
If the devotees think in this way, their desires to attain me will be useless. If the karmis think in this way, they cannot attain swaga. If the jnanis think in this way, they cannot attain liberation. They all become rakshasas. Some will think that the Supreme Lord has a temporary body because of seeing that all others have temporary bodies, so Krishna also has a temporary body. Some bodies live a long time and others a short time. Others will claim that just as the Kurus all died, Krishna died with his family at Prabhas. And by people hearing, speaking, and praising such preaching of wrong ideas by idiots who think that they are learned, immediately one leg of Dharma only will remain. Like Prabhupada, he likes to criticize the Mayavadis and impersonalists. Yes? Yes or no? Is it you're following? Just as eyes afflicted with jaundice see a shining white conch shell to be, what color? People whose minds and eyes are afflicted by Maya will see my departure pastimes, which are actually eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, to be afflicted by material misfortune. They will see and conclude that I gave up my body along with all associates like Pradyumna and like the queens of like Rukmini were burned in the funeral fire. Not only the materialists will see this, even persons like Arjuna will see this by my divine will. And sages like Vaishapayana and Parasara will describe this in their works. And Shiva, my devotee, taking birth in Kali Yuga, will preach this in a commentary of the Vedanta Sutras in order to spread Kali's influence. Persons with no intelligence, repeatedly studying the sutras, will explain the meaning according to that commentary. Sukshmoya karanopadir mayake aneka shaktimaneva bhagavad deha. The body of the Lord possessing unlimited powers is a subtle covering of maya on Brahman. Thinking in this way, with the idea of producing a great disturbance, the Lord spoke this verse, expressing fear and agitation. This verse: we should not remain here any longer. These bad omens are like flags of death. Is there any fear of the Lord being cruel in this plan? Vishwanath continues. He's saying, is this a cruel plan? For those other than devotees, at the time of the ripening of their bad karma, their unfortunate path would manifest anyway. So there's a conjunction of the evil karma of Kali Yuga approaching and the Lord's supreme will. Actually, it describes in the Bhagavatam why in one of Prabhupada's purports, why Parikit Maharaj was cursed, and here the ending of his time on this world, it had to happen, because as we have heard in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in Parikit Maharaj's presence Kali could not enter and have influence. And yet, as the ages progressively get worse and people's sinful activities progressively increase, and therefore the reactions to people's sinful activities increase, therefore Kali has to come. Kali has to come, and yet Parikit Maharaj can't allow Kali to act. So, because Kali has to come by Krishna's arrangement, Parikit Maharaj has to go. And therefore, he's cursed by the Brahmin boy, Sringi. Kali has to come because it is a sinful age. So it is not just a cruel plan of the Lord. It is necessary because Kali has to come because of the sinful deeds and the sinful reactions of the people. The will of the Lord alone is the cause, continuing here.
The will of the Lord alone is the cause of the good or bad karmas manifesting. In other words, nothing can happen without the will of the Lord. So is that also the cruelty of Krishna? That I stand in front of a train and the train knocks me over, and then someone says not a blade of grass can move without Krishna's will, so therefore it's Krishna's fault. Otherwise, one could also accuse Buddha of being cruel by telling people to reject the Vedas. The Lord spoke the truth about his pastimes to Uddhava in order to dispel doubts for the devotee's worship. Uddhava said, when I asked the Lord, this is from Bhagavatam 3.4.19, when I asked the lotus-eyed Lord what I desired in my heart, he explained to me his supreme decision. So this was his supreme decision. Stitim means the decision of the Lord concerning the arrangement of his pastimes and the eternal residence of Dwarka. Uddhava also explained the disappearance pastimes of the Lord in 3.2.11. The Lord, having shown his form, the center of attraction for all eyes, then took that form and disappeared from men who had not performed austerities, but who attained the Lord's mercy and were continually craving a vision of his form. That's 3.2.11. Could you look that one up and that trend? Yeah.
Good.
Huh?
Lord Shri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of all the earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is due to not executing required penance.
Clearer. Okay, so, and that was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment 2.5. So when we hear the pastimes, we are fixed in philosophy and the wonder of Krishna's activities. Now, when Krishna said that we should not stay here any longer, the women and children, he continued to speak, and old men should leave the city and go to Shankodara. We shall go to Prabhaschetra, where the river Saraswati flows towards the west. There we should bathe for purification. We should fast and fix our minds in meditation. We should then worship the demigods by bathing their images, anointing them with sandalwood pulp, and presenting them various offerings. After performing the expiatory rituals, with the help of greatly fortunate brahmanas, we will worship those brahmanas by offering them cows, land, gold, clothing, elephants, horses, chariots, and dwelling places. This, by the way, Vishwanath says, this is not the Lord's version of what's actually happening, because we heard what's really happening. This is what is happening on the external level. It's not what's really happening. And what's really happening, Vishwanath says, the Lord's version is expressed, it starts in verse 27. So up to this point, this is not exactly what's happening. This is indeed the appropriate process for counteracting our imminent adversity, and it is sure to bring about the highest good fortune. Such worship of the demigods, Brahmins, and cows can earn the highest benefit, the highest birth for all living entities, all living beings, entities. Having heard these words from Lord Krishna, the enemy of Madhu, the elders of the Yadu dynasty gave their assent, saying, Tatastu, Tateti, so be it. And after crossing the ocean in boats, they proceeded on chariots to Prabhas. There, with great devotion, the Yadavas performed the religious ceremonies according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their personal Lord. They also performed various other auspicious rituals. Then, their intelligence covered by providence, they liberally indulge in drinking the sweet Maireya beverage, which can completely intoxicate the mind. So there's a comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to this. Areyakam is a type of liquor, from this verse until verse 26, the opinions of others, which are not the actual truth, are expressed. Because the Lord has said in the 11th canto, in the 6th chapter, 37 to 38, by bathing in Prabhachetra, by offering tapan to the pitris and devatas, by feeding the worshipful brahmanas with various delicious foodstuffs, and by bestowing gifts upon them as the most suitable candidates for charity, like sowing seeds, we will certainly cross over these terrible dangers through such acts of charity, just as one can cross over a great ocean in a suitable boat. Thus the devatas, on the strength of the Lord's words, overcame the curse of the brahmanas by giving charity. Drinking wine, they disappeared and ascended to Swarga. The Lord's version of the event starts in 27. Previously, the Lord said, and in the Sanskrit in 3.3.15, when they will quarrel amongst themselves with red eyes because of complete intoxication from liquor, they will actually not die. The cause of their disappearance is otherwise. Only when I decide that they disappear, they will disappear spontaneously. The meaning of the above verse is this. When the quarrel will arise, it is not a method of killing them. That quarrel among them cannot be the cause of their death. Even beating each other with a handful of reeds will not kill them. The quarrel and the killing seen by ordinary people are not actual. What was the cause of their destruction? It is other killing. It is other than killing. What is it? When I desire, they will simply disappear. That is certain. The heroes of the Yadu dynasty became intoxicated from their extravagant drinking and began to feel arrogant. When they were thus bewildered by the personal potency of Lord Krishna, a terrible quarrel arose among them. Infuriated, they seized their bows and arrows, their swords, their balas, their clubs, their lances and spears, and they attacked one another on the shore of the ocean, riding on elephants, chariots with flags flying, and also on donkeys, camels, bulls, buffaloes, mules, and even human beings. The extremely enraged warriors came together and violently attacked one another with arrows, just as elephants in the forest attack one another with their tusks. Their mutual enmity aroused. Pradyumna fought fiercely against Samba, Akura against Kunti Bhoja, Aniruddha against Satyaki, Subhadra against Sangramajit, Sumitra against Surata, and the two Gadas against each other. One of the Gadas was a brother of Krishna, and the other was a son of Krishna. Others also, such as Nisatta, Ulmukha, Sahasrajit, Satajit, and Banu, confronted and killed one another, being blinded by intoxication, and thus completely bewildered by Lord Mukunda himself. Completely abandoning their natural friendship, the members of the various Yadu clans, the Dasarhas, the Vrishnis, the Andakas, the Bhojas, the Satvatas, Madhus, and Arbudas, and the Maturas, Surasenas, Visharjanas, Kukuras, and Kuntis, all slaughtered one another. Thus bewildered, sons fought with fathers, brothers with brothers, nephews with paternal and maternal uncles, and grandsons with grandfathers, friend fought with friend, well-wishers with well-wishers. In this way, intimate friends and relatives all killed one another. When all their bows had been broken and their arrows and other missiles spent, used up, they seized the tall stalks of cane with their bare hands. And as soon as they took these cane stalks in their fist, the stalks changed into iron rods as hard as thunderbolts. And with these weapons, the warriors began attacking one another again and again. And when Lord Krishna tried to stop them, they attacked him as well. In their confused state, O king, they also mistook Lord Balaram for an enemy, and weapons in hand, they ran toward him with the intention of killing him. They attacked Krishna and Balaram. O son of the Kurus, Krishna and Balaram then became very angry, and picking up cane stalks, they moved about within the battle and began to kill with these clubs. The violent anger of these warriors, who were overcome by the Brahmin's curse and bewildered by Lord Krishna's illusory potency, now led them to their annihilation, just as fire that starts in a bamboo grove destroys the entire forest. When all the members of his own dynasty were thus destroyed, Lord Krishna thought to himself that at last the burden of the earth had been removed. Lord Balaram then sat down on the shore of the ocean and fixed himself in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, merging himself within himself. He gave up this mortal world. He left. Lord Krishna, 27 begins Krishna's version. That was all the external version. Does that feel a relief? That was all the external, but that wasn't what was happening at all, actually. Krishna just said, "Chalo, let's go." Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, having seen the departure of Lord Ram, sat down silently on the ground under a nearby peepal tree. Vishwanath comments, "From here the Lord's version starts. Seeing Balaram return in his swarup to Mahavaikuntha, and his amps, his part, go beneath Patala as Shesha, and there in that place in Prabhas, there's a temple in under the earth, if I remember, that where Balaram went down and meditated. So he saw his amps, so his part went to Patala as Shesha, then Krishna went to sat under a small peepal tree. This is also described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. That place is still there, and that peepal tree is there. It's called Balki Tirtha. Has anyone been? Near the Somnath temple. Near the ocean. The Lord was exhibiting his brilliant effulgent forearm form, the radiance of which, just like a smokeless fire, dissipated the darkness in all directions. His complexion was the color of a dark blue cloud, and his effulgence the color of molten gold, and his all-auspicious form bore the mark of Srivats. A beautiful smile graced his lotus face. Locks of dark blue hair adorned his head. His lotus eyes were very attractive, and his shark-shaped earrings glittered. He wore a pair of silken garments, an ornamental belt, the sacred thread bracelets and arm ornaments, along with a helmet, the kastuba jewel, necklace, anklets, and other royal emblems. Encircling his body were flower garlands and his personal weapons in their embodied forms. As he sat, he held his left foot with its lotus red sole upon his right thigh. Just then a hunter named Jara, who had approached the place, mistook the Lord's foot for a deer's face. Thinking he had found his prey, Jara pierced the foot with his arrow, which he had fashioned from the remaining iron fragment of Samba's club. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the statement that the arrow pierced the Lord's foot expresses the point of view of the hunter, who thought that he had struck a deer. In fact, the arrow merely touched the Lord's foot and did not pierce it, since the Lord's limbs are composed of eternity of knowledge and bliss. Otherwise, in the description of the next verse, that the hunter became fearful and fell down with his head upon the Lord's feet, Sukadev Goswami would have stated that he extracted his arrow from the Lord's foot. So there's so many comments on this point, that it couldn't have happened unless it was just by Krishna's arrangement. Otherwise, very close, nearby, there were millions of Yadus who had killed each other and were beating each other, and everyone had just died. And very unlikely that a hunter would walk up and see a deer. So it's just some play, dramatic performance by Krishna. Then seeing that form, personality, the hunter became terrified of the offense he had committed and he fell down, placing his head upon the feet of the enemy of the demons. Jara said, O Madhusudan, O Lord Madhusudan, I am a most sinful person. I have committed this act out of ignorance. O purest Lord, O Uttama Sloka, please forgive this sinner. O Lord Vishnu, the learned say that for any man, constant remembrance of you will destroy the darkness of ignorance. O Master, I have wronged you. Therefore, O Lord of Vaikuntha, please kill this sinful hunter of animals immediately, so he may not commit such offenses against saintly persons. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that the fratricidal battle of the Yadu dynasty and the hunter's attack upon Lord Krishna are clearly activities of the Lord's internal potency for the purpose of fulfilling the Lord's pastime desires. According to the evidence, the quarrel amongst the members of the Yadu dynasty occurred at sunset. Then the Lord sat down on the bank of the Saraswati River. It is stated that a hunter then arrived with the intention of killing a deer, but it is highly unlikely. When more than 560 million warriors had just been killed in a great uproarious battle, and the place had been flooded with blood and strewn with corpses, that a simple hunter would somehow come along trying to kill a deer. Since deer are by nature fearful and timid, how could any deer possibly be on the scene of such a huge battle? And how could a hunter calmly go about his business in the midst of such carnage, destruction? Therefore, the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty and Lord Krishna's own disappearance from this earth were not material historical events. They were instead a display of the Lord's internal potency for the purpose of winding up his manifest pastimes on earth. So Jara continues, neither Brahma nor his sons, headed by Rudra, nor any of the great sages who are masters of the Vedic mantras can understand the functioning of your mystic power. Because your illusory potency has covered their eyesight, they remain ignorant of how your mystic power works. Therefore, what can I, such a low-born person, possibly say? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has lifted the curtain of Krishna's maya to explain exactly what's going on. And Krishna responded, my dear Jara, do not fear. Please get up. What has been done is actually my own desire. With my permission, go now to the abode of the pious, the spiritual world. Vishwanath says, this is my desire. I had to accept the curse of the Brahmana. It was my desire. Go to the spiritual place of those with the best actions, my devotees. Go to Vaikuntha. Sukhitinam means of those possessing good acts. He said this to praise the hunter. So instructed by the Supreme Lord Krishna, who assumes his transcendental body by his own will, the hunter circumambulated the Lord three times and bowed down to him. Then the hunter departed in an aeroplane that had appeared just to carry him to the spiritual sky. At that time, Naruka was searching for his master Krishna. As he neared the place where the Lord was sitting, he perceived the aroma of tulsi flowers in the breeze, and he went in its direction. Because Krishna's aroma is so unique and so captivating, Mahaprabhu in Antyalila, he's completely captured by the aroma of Krishna, the fragrance of Krishna. But anyway, Dharka followed that fragrance. And upon seeing Lord Krishna resting at the foot of a banyan tree, surrounded by his shining weapons, Dharka could not control the affection he felt in his heart. His eyes filled with tears as he rushed down from the chariot and fell at the Lord's feet. Dharka said, just as on a moonless night people are merged into darkness and cannot find their way, Now that I have lost sight of your lotus feet, my Lord, I have lost my vision, and I am wandering blindly in darkness. I cannot tell my direction, nor can I find any peace. Sukadev Goswami continued after Dorakha spoke. O foremost of kings, Pariket, while the chariot driver was still speaking before his very eyes, the Lord's chariot rose up into the sky along with its horses and flags, which were marked with the emblem of Garuda. And all the divine weapons of Vishnu rose up and followed the chariot. The Lord, Janardan, then spoke to his chariot driver, who was most astonished to see this. Vishwanath says, though the chariot was sent to Vaikuntha, the charioteer, Dharuka, was not sent. This arrangement was made so that Dharuka would inform others of the present situation, of the great devastation that had taken place, and that he, who had originally come from Vaikuntha, would now enter into the unmanifested uppercut lila in Dwarka, on seeing that in Dwarka there was an increase in prema with all the eternal associates such as Uddhava. Dharuka should inform others of the Lord's condition, and that he would be now performing unmanifest pastimes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura is so kind. So Dharuka was astonished to see what had happened. O driver, he said, go to Dwarka and tell our family members how their loved ones destroyed one another. Also tell them of the disappearance of Lord Sankarshan and of my present condition. So Dharuka had some, even though he was chariotless, he had some final service to do. You and your relatives should not remain in Dwarka, the capital of the Yadus, because once I have abandoned that city, it will be inundated, destroyed by the sea. You should take all your own families. You should all take your own families together with my parents, and under Arjuna's protection, go to Indraprastha. You, Dharuka, should be firmly situated in devotion to me, remaining fixed in spiritual knowledge and unattached to material considerations. Basically, the same knowledge he gave to Uddhava and the same knowledge he's giving to us all. Become fixed in devotion, unmotivated devotional service to me. Understanding these pastimes to be a display of my illusory potency, you should remain peaceful. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the word two here emphasizes that Dharuka is an eternally liberated associate of Lord Krishna, having descended from Vaikuntha. Therefore, even though others might be bewildered by Lord Krishna's pastimes, by the Lord's pastimes, Dharuka should remain peaceful and fixed in spiritual knowledge. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, what is the nature of this arrangement of disappearing, since you have a form which is eternity, knowledge, and bliss? Please be merciful and explain that to me. So that's what Dharuka is saying. Krishna says, understand these pastimes to be a display of my illusory potency, you should remain peaceful. So that's Krishna's reply. Be merciful and explain that to me. This deceptive pastime was created by my Maya. Vishwanath, that's the conclusion of Vishwanath's comment. And the final verse in this chapter, thus ordered, Dharuka circumambulated the Lord and offered obeisances to him again and again. He placed Lord Krishna's lotus feet upon his head, and then with a sad heart, he went back to the city. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 11th canto, 30th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Disappearance of the Yadu Dynasty. Okay. So It's 20 after right now, at exactly 10 of. We shall begin the final chapter of the 11th canto. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Ki Jai, the commentaries of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Srila Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai.